Welcome back to Mage Hand High Five. I'm your Dungeon Master, Casey Pappas, and this week's ranking comes from one of our patrons, Patrick Hickman, ranked from least to most likely to start a cult.
Yeah, here we go. Getting the real questions now.
Ooh.
Okay.
Max Weinberg.
Wow, that's...
I
dislike your lack of confidence in me. But yeah, I'm playing Stump Steenling, who I think could definitely lead a multi-level marketing scheme.
I don't think he would realize that he's doing it, though.
Oh, yeah.
It would be completely by accident.
Rowan McStay.
Hi there, I'm Rowan McStay, playing Salome Briar, and what if I told you you could be your own boss? I've got this really exciting stuff to show you. We make soap. They're really incredible.
Last and definitely not least, Robin Langenhop.
Hey everybody, this is Robin here. I play Hayden Kincaid, but you knew that, because you've been following the path. And as you continue to walk on the path, make sure you send your money to P.O. Box.
It's too bad we don't have a show P.O. Box that we could have put there.
Send all of your money to Robin's real address.
Hey, listeners, if you would like us to have a P.O. Box, you can send me tithes. Let us know.
You have to reserve 10% of your income to send to Robin's tithe box.
To learn more about the path, for just pennies a day.
For just pennies a day, you too can feed Robin's ego. Oh, shoot. Also, before we just dive all the way in, stay tuned after the show for a promo from Deck of Many Aces, an Ace D&D podcast.
Are they afraid? Are they afraid?
You know what? Just for the community, I hope so. We're all ace and afraid. Perfect. Here, baby. And with that, y'all want to play some D&D?
Let's do it.
Let's dive right in. Last time on Mage Hand High Five, you met with Dr. Bancroft to swap notes on the Red-Eyed God. She reveals another artifact, a lost book, which may reveal the secrets of long-lost Tellera. She's likely the only person who could read it if it were ever found. She's also made it clear that her priorities lie with uncovering knowledge, though she'd prefer power not fall into the wrong hands. You connect the Guardian of the Door with the Church's ideology, suggesting influence there that would date the Door to before most civilization. Stump reveals to everyone that he stole the amulet from the church. You receive a message that drinks at the Wet Rat are free tonight, so you all stop by. Hayden is reunited with their hat of disguise when they outsmart a group of teenagers.
What, like it's hard?
But teaches them some tricks of the trade. Salome finally meets the specter of death, V, and discovers her mother's connection with life and death included ferrying souls. Stump, upon hearing his family is safe, sets out on a heist with Earl, helping settle a territory dispute in the seedy world of the rock trade in Twin River, and securing a special rock for Sally. And now, as the dawn peaks over the distant mountains, you all awake the next morning and head down one by one to a little continental breakfast.
After the events of last evening, Salome has not been able to order a drink for herself in like 9 years, and she likes the fruity shit. Like, it's either for her, it's either straight whiskey or the fruitiest thing you've ever had. And she had a lot of the fruitiest thing you've ever had and has the worst headache of her life.
Hey, Salome, you don't look too high right now, do you?
Good morning, Stump.
I can whip something up for you.
You got something?
Oh, yeah, I got the cure for what you got.
Holy hell, Stump, I'd have to feel better to die.
I don't know, I pulled some concoction out of my ass to make a... I'm sure I've made some sort of hangover cure before.
I tried laying on hands myself, and it don't even work.
Here's the thing, I'm sure you have, but also... I don't know if married life has been like one nonstop party, you know? So let's have you roll a medicine check.
Okay.
Okay.
It's a 16.
All right.
It's a 16. Okay. It doesn't alleviate all of it, but like you can at least see without a headache.
Well, thank you, darling. I'm just going to lay my head right down on this table and try to forget my own name for a second.
Hayden comes over to the table with three mugs of coffee, sets them down all in front of themselves, and goes, oh, any of y'all want anything?
Yes, and I take a cup from Hayden.
Oh, all right, I got to go back and get some coffee. Salome, anything for you?
I take the other two cups from Hayden.
Great, three more coming up.
One more.
How many do you think they've had already, Stump?
Today?
They seem too chipper to have just woken up.
I hope it's only like two at the most.
Listen, I'm too tired to keep them from having any more.
I'll do my best.
I'm a dapper little lady and I'm wearing a hat. I'm a dapper little lady and I'm wearing a hat.
Hey, darling.
Yes?
Hey.
What?
Dear heart, I've been up damn near all night drinking and contemplating the nature of existence and how all life is sacred. And I've got the biggest headache of my life. So I'm going to need you to just keep the singing to a dull roar for like the next 12 hours, if that's all right.
I'm a dapper little lady and I'm wearing a hat.
Thank you so much.
I'm a dapper little lady and I'm wearing a hat.
Y'all, I feel like we woke up on real different levels this morning.
So while we're all sitting here, what do we want to do next?
That seems to be the fundamental question most days, but I feel like we've pretty much got three options, as I understand it. We got option one, we just have ourselves a grand old time here in Twin River and just enjoy ourselves and not worry about anything else that's going on in the rest of the world. Option two, we head down south a little bit and check out this other door situation, what's going on there. Option three, there's some Blackthorn Hollow something or other going on that I know that at least one of us would like to investigate. So those are the options as I see them.
Yeah, y'all, I'm starting to get real worried, honestly, that my answer in more danger than we even expected. I'm real afraid if we don't get up there soon that I might not see him again.
Well, that's just,
I mean, that door's going to be there for another 1,000 years, so we probably, you know,
yeah, it's been there
a little
for
more
a
important
minute.
To maybe go see the family. Yeah.
If Dr. Bancroft was right, I think that door's been there a little longer than the refinery has been shut down, so.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere.
Thank you. I do need to go to Blackthorn Hollow. I'd love if y'all came with.
Of course, kid.
Absolutely. I'm not leaving y'all behind at this point.
Great, because y'all might have to carry me out of here.
Great. You all start to make preparations to head out. And as you are leaving, various people sort of gather to see you off, including, but not limited to, Portins and Charlie.
Oh no, we gotta leave them.
Dr. Bancroft, Earl Letterbetter.
Ah, fuck, Earl. God, I'm gonna miss him.
And Maverick LaMarche.
Are there three other people that are missing from this group?
We're
there
very are. Invested in those interns.
And you know what? Standing standing in front of Dr. Bancroft, even more appreciative of you as you head out, are Bethany, Gerard, and Sasha.
Yeah. We ignore everyone else and go straight to Bethany, Gerard, and Sasha.
You approach the group for a hug, and it looks like you're going for Charlie, and then you walk past them and hug Bethany.
Oh, Bethany, we're so proud of you.
And Charlie's like, that's fine. That happens to me all the time. It's fine.
Oh, shoot, Charlie. Sorry about that.
Bethany comes over and says, hey, thanks for some hands-on research experience. We don't get to fight people in a research capacity, so this was something.
Well, if you ever want to do some research on how to properly use a crossbow to fight the forces of evil, then let us know, and you can do a sort of traveling apprenticeship.
Sasha goes, okay, hell yeah. Yeah, I would like some crossbow training.
There's a slot available if you want to come along with us.
Sasha starts to, and then Dr. Bancroft, like, puts a hand on her shoulder and goes, no, there's no credit for going off on an adventure.
Sasha, I see you.
I see you.
I go up to Portins and Charlie, and actually I go up to Charlie first.
Okay.
And I say, well, darling, it has been a hell of a time traveling with y'all. I gotta tell you, I kind of missed growing up on the road like this. I mean, it's a hell of a way to come up in the world, ain't it?
They're sort of wringing their hands, and they say, yeah, It's been grand, and I don't know. It's kind of sad seeing y'all leave, because this is the first time I've had friends that have stuck around for longer than, you know, a couple days.
Yeah.
There's no offense against that kind of lifestyle. I really like it, but moss don't grow on a rolling stone.
I wanted to say to you, Charlie, I grew up the same way, and I loved the time that I got to spend with my family. It meant everything to me. And I think we were real close because of it, but I didn't have a whole lot of friends my own age growing up either. I think it's okay for you to want to maybe put down roots somewhere, settle down somewhere for a little bit longer than a couple days. And I know how much you worry about portents, but I tell you what, that old grumpy man loves the hell out of you. And I think he's going to love you no matter what you decide to do. I think he might understand if you talk to him a little more than you think he would.
Shoot, I mean, I've always been a little scared of disappointing him, but I don't know. When I came back last night, when y'all brought me back last night, it just, I don't know. Like, I'd never seen him like that before. Sort of completely broken down and relieved, and I don't know. I think you might be right. Like, maybe he would be okay with me just finding a place, but...
Don't tell him I told you this, but he told me he'd be proud of you no matter what you did.
They sort of, like, look over at Professor Portens, who's, like, talking to somebody else, and they say, oh, well, wherever y'all are headed, I know that y'all will get through it. So just, you know, come back here safe and sound, okay?
Well, thank you, dear heart. We're going to try, that's for sure. You go out and you spread those wings. Put down roots if you need to. Just don't do what I did and lose your way home, and you'll be all right.
They nod, and they sort of take a step back.
I'm going to go grab Portens and just kind of say to him, so before, when we first met you, I thought you were kind of an ass.
what a start.
All right. So... I guess I'll have to take that one on the chin.
I mean, you were, you know, blowing 1 in 20 people up with your potion, so...
Well, okay. You know. I mean, if we really do want to set the record straight, you can say that you did blackmail me in our first ever conversation.
Yeah, it's okay. I own that. It happened.
Well, all right. I mean,
I haven't heard you say, yes, I blow people up every so often.
Listen, it was one time, and they were fine.
I can tell you with certainty, I've never blown up a person. But, you know, we've gotten to know each other, and, you know, you're not really an ass anymore. And before I offered Charlie kind of a, you know, an escape from you if they wanted it, and
oh.
There's an opening for an apothecary. Yeah, yeah, you know, they didn't take it, but...
Okay.
But there's an opening for an apothecary up in Mountain Creek. That if you and Charlie wanted to head there and maybe settle down a little bit after this big old adventure y'all just had, might be kind of nice. I told them about it. They said they didn't want it, but let me write this note. It says that Stump sent you, and if you give this to go find Kate Steenling, she'll get you hooked up.
You pass the note over, and the professor sort of twirls it in his hands, and he says,
I don't want to admit it, but Charlie's... I think the traveling life is wearing thin on him. I suppose it might not be the worst thing in the world to find a place to kick back and kick up your shoes.
It's a pretty good place to kind of retire to, not gonna lie.
Well, then it'll have to be a serious conversation between Charlie and I about where we head to next. To be honest, I've been leading the reins for a long time. It might be time for Charlie to... have a hand at the wheel.
Yeah, they're a good kid.
They are. They're a better kid than I deserve.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Okay. All right. All right. He smiles and he claps a hand on you and he says, well, Stump, I look forward to your career with vested interest.
Thanks.
All right. Well,
I look forward to what? Yeah, I look forward to your retirement. Like, are
okay.
You? I hope you're okay. I hope your life is fine. But like, I don't know. What do you want from me?
He sort of throws his hands up and goes, all right. And then steps back.
You know how like older men don't know how to show affection for each other?
But we absolutely like shake hands for an extended period of time, just like acknowledging each other.
Oh, yeah.
That's so good.
Hayden steps up and says, Zara, I'm not good at this kind of thing. I have a tendency to give you a kind of a see you later and then I'd never see you again because something horrible has happened. So can I just want to say, just don't get murdered, please. I can count the people that I know and trust and care about on one hand, and y'all are on that list. So just please, your family don't die. Okay, I'm gonna go now. Sorry, excuse me.
No. You start to turn, and Charlie just like wraps you in a hug.
Oh,
Portence comes over and sort of like sidearm like hugs you as well, and Charlie says, I'm not dying yet. And Porton says, I don't plan on it, but, you know, we'll see.
That's oddly more comforting than I was expecting, so I appreciate it. And I will be seeing y'all again, all right?
Not if we see you first.
Hey, Professor, I want you to know I don't care what my aunts had to say about you. You are one of the best people I ever met. And if I run into them, I'll put in a good word for you. I'll let them know you saved me and half of Providence. And, you know, hell, if you ever find the high road, you let me know, because I hope one of us can make him proud one day.
you see his face turns a little red, and he goes, thank you. I'll try.
Me too. Let me know how it goes. I don't know how either of us is going to do, but we'll do our best.
Listen, knowing your aunts, they're the toughest people I know, probably a little too tough. I think you'll find them. And I have a feeling everything will be okay.
Yeah, I hope more than anything in the world that you're right. And I give him a little kiss on the cheek and step back.
Portence and Charlie sort of take a step back, and you all sort of say your goodbyes, and Earl comes up to you and says, hey, there he is.
Yeah. Hey, Earl, how's it going? I gotta head out right now. I'm sorry, but it's been an absolute blast. And Stump goes in for a hug, but accidentally goes in for the same side that Earl's face is on, and then they kind of do that dance, like, back and forth. Keep putting their face...
Hey, no, my God, I think they're finally gonna kiss.
Honestly, it's been a long time coming at this point.
Earl goes in for a high five instead.
Yeah, that's probably for the better. Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Hey, stay safe out there. I want to see you back in Twin River. We'll paint the town red.
Hey, and if you ever want to get out of the big city and kind of get to a little bit more of a mountain town, I'll put in a good word for you out in Mount Creek.
Okay, where the hell is that?
just a little over that way, in the mountain by the creek.
Hey, you know...
So it's where I asked. It's where I live.
Sounds idyllic. Hey, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe. We'll see.
And as we go to say bye, I go in for a hug again, and it's just the absolute same thing, where we're just...
It's just
almost
five,
kissing.
It's just 5 minutes of just back and forth. Yeah. Like, what?
From the outside, it looks like we're just kind of dancing with our upper bodies, trying to...
Two little guys.
Sha-la-la-la-la-la, my oh my.
Kiss the Earl.
We're guessing that one gets sued.
We can't afford the rights for that joke. We can't afford it.
It's parody, guys. It's parody.
Great. And then last but not least, LaMarche sort of comes up, and he has sort of a package under one arm.
Mm.
Oh.
He says, well, you're sort of leaving a little quietly for three people who came in with quite the bang into my little town.
Well, in fairness, there's a good... There's
we can change that.
There's a veritable gaggle of people here to say goodbye to us, so we really tried to skip out, but, you know, this is quite louder than we were planning on.
Yeah, it's nice to be wanted instead of wanted, you know?
There you go.
Well, keep in mind, you'll always have a home here in Twin River. And, as a token of my personal appreciation, I hope you enjoyed the drinks last night, but I've got a little bit extra for each of you.
Oh,
you shouldn't have, Mr. LaMarche.
He sort of unrolls this roll, and on it are three items.
Ooh, that's fun.
He turns to you, Stump, and he says,
as a man of the poison, I assume these might come in handy.
And he hands you a pair of gloves.
Thanks. What do they do?
I mean, they protect your hands, okay. Stump.
Maverick hands you the pair of gloves, and he says, these will allow your poisons to go a little bit further.
And out of game, whenever you deal poison damage, the target needs to succeed a constitution saving throw or become poisoned.
Ooh. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's exciting.
And then he turns to you, Salome, and he says, for someone who is stepping into a role where they might be taking more blows than they're accustomed to.
Yeah, just a few.
And he picks up an amulet.
Okay.
He hands it to you, and he says, you'll find that wearing this, you'll take a few more hits.
Drops your AC by 4.
It just attracts fists to you.
With the amulet of health, while you're wearing it, your constitution becomes a 19.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah, I kind of take it up and look at it and go, well, as I live and breathe, he's clever, he's good looking, and he's got great taste in jewelry. Look at this. It's magic and all.
He sort of blushes and says, it's all in the clothing. The clothes make the man or the woman.
Yeah, you know, sometimes shorts just better, you know. Thank you, Mr. LaMarche.
He sort of smiles and he turns to you and he says, Hayden.
Ooh, yes.
And he holds up a dagger. And he says, you'll find that in combat, if you were to throw this into the air, you won't be alone in your fight. And he hands you a dancing dagger.
Ooh.
In combat, if you throw it into the air, it moves on its own, and you control it for a bonus action.
Oh my goodness, I have a new friend. Thank you very much.
He says, well,
my gift bag's all empty. But.
Oh, what's that?
Are you trying to improv a new magic item for us?
Of course, yeah.
Salome looks through her bags and pockets and stuff to try to find something to give Maverick in return, because she didn't know they were going to get gifts today, and all she can find is a bran muffin.
I was like, just going to say, Hayden tries to hand you a bran muffin.
She's like, I can't give him this.
Stump slaps that out of your hand.
I'm not going to give
that's
it to
a perfectly
him, Stump.
Good bran muffin. Oh, fine. You know what? Bran muffins are delicious, all right? I'm saying
you eat it then.
This tense conversation erupts between the three of you, and Maverick goes, okay, well,
Yeah, just very, very demure. Salome's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm afraid we don't have anything we can give you in return, but thank you so much.
Well, I wasn't expecting anything in return, but I do respect you three to return.
Well, hey.
We'll do our best.
We'll do what we can. You give the church and the Jamesons a hello for us, won't you?
I will, and whatever's holding your aunts back, you give it hell.
Thank you, Mr. LaMarche.
Oh, yeah, we got to come back and tell him what happened in Blackthorn Hollow, because it's his place.
I would like to know what happens in a place that I technically have jurisdiction over.
Absolutely.
Great. You all head out of Twin River. You see your friends wave on it and shrink into the distance. The sun starts to climb higher in the sky, and as you do, you look ahead. And on the horizon to the north, you see a line of trees. But not just trees, gnarled willows and thrush. It looms as you start to head towards it. And as you do, you see storm clouds rolling in from the north, almost like an advance guard sent to stop you by the bog.
Before things get too spooky, I will say, when Professor Portens goes back to their wagon, they find that all of the facial hair has been stolen
and replaced with just one wild rose.
He is sort of looking over his things, and he goes, "Ah, my private, my favorite, my lovely." And he opens a little box, and it sort of glows as he opens it. And he looks in, and there's lines of sort of rose where facial hair would be. There's an outline of where they're supposed to be. Like, there's a handlebar mustache. There's a full-blown curly Q. There's a Van Dyke. There's, like, a wizard's beard.
It's all gone.
And he goes, "No." He looks. There's a wild rose in the back. And cut to Salome wearing all of them at the same time.
Exactly. And then as soon as we see the clouds rolling over the horizon, I'll just, like, take them off.
I look over and go, "Salome, you know that I have multiple instances of disguise and power. You really didn't need to collect all of those."
"Oh, yeah, it was just for shits and giggles."
"No, all right."
You all march forward, and the clouds roll in. And before long, it starts to drizzle. It gets a little hazy. And as you're walking along, you make your way through bramble and brush. The open road winds through hills and small forests. There's all manner of wildlife that you see in the distance. Wildlife that you might not be accustomed to where each of you come from. Except maybe Stump. Over the past 20 years, you might have become more accustomed to this sort of wildlife. You see elk grazing in the distance. Large hawks swoop down, catch something in their claws, and take to the sky. In the distance, a massive grizzly bear fishes by a stream.
Ooh.
Patiently.
Cool.
Stump, as you're all three walking along, the hairs on the back of your neck prickle. And there's a thought in the back of your mind, like a stone in your shoe. It rattles and sometimes jabs you until you can ignore it no longer. You look over and see Hayden walking along next to you. You see atop their head, in all its splendorous color, the feather in the cap of their hat of disguise. They have it back, and that's great, but they also have your amulet. And that bothers you. It doesn't sit well that the object that you have spent 20 years looking after, 20 years as the sole caretaker, and moving across the country to spare your family, to keep safe, that it is no longer in your possession, and that the deal that you made to hand it over is no longer in effect.
"Hey, Hayden?
Yes, what's up?
We kind of had a deal, you know, for, you know, you carry my amulet and I carry your hat. I know it kind of didn't go well the last time I carried your hat, but I was just kind of wondering if maybe you could either, you know, could still have that deal or I could get my amulet back. It's kind of important."
Can I roll an insight?
Sure.
Kind of same, just to be passively observing this.
I only got a 9.
I got a 15.
Okay. With a 9, Stump seems reasonably concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Stump, as far as you're aware, has been carrying this amulet for a long time, stole it from a dangerous organization who just tried to kill all three of you, and is on the run from a separate dangerous organization who tried to kill you previously. So the idea is not entirely irrational.
All right.
Salome, with a 15, you do see Stump's hands clenching.
I'll just take note of that. I'm not going to do anything until something happens.
And as you do take note of that, the drizzle becomes rain.
Well, Stump, I understand where you're coming from on this. I don't want to put you in danger again by giving you the hat and having another one of those people think you're the stranger type situations, but, you know, a deal is a deal. So, here. And I will
hand the hat over.
Appreciate it.
Stump, as you put on the hat, there is there is a small part of you that burns with just a little bit of anger. You're able to keep it in check for now.
Casey.
Yeah.
Can I make a sleight of hand roll, and then I will explain to you what I am attempting to do?
Ooh, okay.
I don't know, because I can't sign off on that. Are you stealing something, or are you putting something in Stump's pocket?
So, I have the fake amulet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when I pass the hat over, I want to casually open my coat and have the amulet become visible for a split second in a way that Stump would notice and think that I messed up.
Like you're baiting Stump into stealing it.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. So I'm going to have you do a contested roll. Hayden, I need you to roll sleight of hand. Stump, okay. I need you to roll perception.
No way this can go wrong.
Okay. That's a 4?
Okay, well, that's a 14 on the die, so I think I got it.
Stump, as you put on the hat, you see Hayden sort of throw their cloak to the side, sort of brushing their hands back onto their waist, and as you do, you see the glint of the amulet in one of the coat pockets.
Okay. Noted.
I need you to know, we're about to go into a storm here, so I'm intentionally letting my hair get messed up by all this by giving you this hat, so I just want you to know the gesture that I'm presenting to you right now.
Well, I might give you my hat. Oh. I don't need two hats.
Sure. That
Stump once again remembers he has a hat.
Once again.
Here's my, Stump hands Hayden his black Stetson that we know is there.
Ooh, this needs a wash-in, but, you know.
Casey, I think as we're going around here, I think Salome has been... You said there were a lot of willows. I think Salome is peeling at some of the willow bark, because willow bark is, like, medicinal. It's early aspirin, I believe.
Okay.
So yeah. Salome is peeling at the willow bark, as her Aunt Lila would do, taking some bark just in case, you know, she's hungover. She's probably chewing on a little bit. And I want to roll something to see if I can clock, like, the weather is weird. Everything is, like, gloomy in a way that's spooky. Mm-hmm. Can I roll something to see if there's something magic going on here? I know I have divine sense.
Sure.
What would I roll about that?
You can roll Arcana to get a sense if this is, like, sort of a magical thing. If you want to know the true nature of it, like, if you want to know specifics, you would probably cast something.
Yeah, I mean, I have divine sense is what I have.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. You're gathering the bark from the willows. You use a small knife to cut strips, and as you do, you thank the trees for their gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel, just for a second, like you did when you were a child, collecting strips of willow bark for your mother and for your aunts, who knew 1,000 different ways to turn these simple strips of bark into miracle makers. And you look over and you see your two traveling companions. One of them's a little more agitated.
Mm-hmm.
And you worry because you're on the verge of finding out what happened to two people you care about very much. And you're worried that you're caring a lot about these two people right in front of you as well. And that adds to the number of people you have to worry about. And as the sky clouds, as the rain starts to fall harder, you get a sense that this is some sort of ancient magic. But not necessarily sinister. Almost as if the weather rolling in, it's like when you skin your knee and your knee tries to heal itself. You skinning your knee isn't evil, and neither is the body attempting to heal it.
Mm.
And as these clouds roll in, you almost sense that they're a response to something.
I think Salome goes back to peeling willow bark, thinking of Lila, and thinking of the image of the tree that she sent through Earl.
You think of the tree. You think of the large doorway leading underground. And you think of the ghoul.
Mm-hmm. Y'all, I think this place might be real old. And I think it might be having a little bit of a hard time with whatever's going on in Blackthorn Bog.
We are incredibly out of my depth. This is not my area. This is something for y'all, I think.
As you're talking, you pass a sign that says, ahead, the peaceful town of Boiling Brook.
That's quite the name for a peaceful town.
It is pouring now. The rain is heavy. The sky is black, tinged with green. Lightning cracks across the sky, and all three of you realize about the same time that this is the type of weather that necessitates shelter. Now, you are now in Boiling Brook. It's a small town, and to be honest, it's hard to see just how big the town is. It's raining so hard.
Are there any glows of, like, fire, like, from inside any structures, maybe?
There is. In fact, towards the entrance of Boiling Brook, there is a saloon.
Yeah, we run in.
You can't run towards it. The mud is so thick.
Oh. Stump is struggling.
It is exhausting getting to this inn.
Stump, honey, you need a lift?
No, I'll get there.
As you near the entrance, it's a two-story tavern. And from the looks of things, it might be the only two-story building in town. Hayden.
Yes.
Only you. The other two pass in. As you are heading into the inn, something lurks in the corner of your eye. You look over and see a dark, roughly human-shaped figure in the rain. But it looks tall, very tall. But before you can look at it better, it lurches out of sight behind one of the other buildings. And you walk into the Bogland Brew.
Ooh, I thought that was going to be some kind of fey barrier, and I was like,
yeah,
what?
I thought so too.
You see tables set out. You see a couple of travelers sitting around tables. You see behind the counter an old gnome dusts an empty tankard, and over the bar gleams a sword. Beautiful sword. Gleaming silver in the light. And as you walk in, all of you take in, and the person behind the bar says, oh, come in, come in, come in. It's raining cats and dogs out there.
You don't have to tell us twice.
Yeah, we are all soaked, like we're just dripping.
You come in, and he says, come, come. Hey, lay your coats beside the fire, and come warm yourselves up. And you look over and see that there is a burning hearth sitting next to it. Is a little dwarven woman. She sits sharpening an axe. She's draped in furs and bearskins, and you see multiple scars on her face. This woman is used to living in the wilderness. Besides this dwarven woman and besides the man behind the bar, I said travelers earlier, but from the looks of things, it's actually kind of empty in here.
Oof, yeah, I think I go right up to that warm fire.
You all go, set your coats down next to the fire, and the dwarven woman looks up and she says, well, hey there.
Howdy.
You're welcome to sit right over here if you'd like.
Well, sure thing. I don't want to get the hearth wet. I feel like we're all dripping all over the place. It's a little rude. Sorry about that, y'all.
Yeah, apologies.
She smiles and says, oh, don't worry about it, darling. I'm used to this sort of weather. The only reason I'm inside right now is things have been awfully dangerous as of late.
Is that so?
If you listen to old early Porterfield's tales. She points over at the bartender, and the bartender sort of chuckles and goes back to wiping his glasses.
Well, what kind of tales has he been slinging?
Well, I mean, if you ask old Early, he'd be more than happy to lay in on some of the local urban legends.
She smiles and says, but don't go believing everything that he says, all right?
We'll try.
Oh, does he have a reputation for telling tall tales?
She sort of looks over and you see the short stature of the gnome behind the bar, and she says, wildly enough, it's the only type of tale he can tell.
I mean, I'd love a drink, so let's make this happen.
Oh, God, I don't know if I can handle all that.
And no coffee, Hayden.
What?
The dwarf holsters one of her axes, and she says, oh, by the way, I'm Shorna. Shorna Ursula.
Happy to meet you. Appreciate your hospitality.
As you turn to go, you look, and these scars are deep.
Are they old?
Some of them are old. Some of them are more recent. You even see what looks like a bite mark.
Ooh.
Deep in her shoulder.
All right.
You go back to the bar, and old Early says, well, I suppose that it's a little bit of highway robbery if I charge you for the rooms for the night, seeing as how there's not really anywhere else for you to go.
I mean, as long as it's a fair price.
Well, shoot, why don't we say it's 1 gold for the three of you? I'll set you up for 3 rooms for the night, and we can call it there, you know?
Well, that's mighty generous of you. Thank you very kind.
We can keep the tab running depending on how long this rainstorm holds out.
Perfect.
Rainstorms in this area of the world, they could last on for days. Sometimes weeks.
Is that so?
I mean, don't get me started on the weather. But here, y'all having anything to drink or eat this evening?
Well, I don't know about the rest of these three, but I gotta say, I would love a nice glass of whiskey, whatever you got around, and I could certainly have a good meal. What do you got on the menu?
Oh, God, Salome hears whiskey and just throws up just a little.
He says, well, we got a nice stew on this evening. Nice rabbit stew, if any of y'all are interested. It's actually about that time from the back doors comes a small gnome woman. And he says, it's actually my niece here's specialty. Brinley.
Oh, my.
Would that be rabbit stew for all three of you?
Yes, for me.
Yeah, sure.
Yes to the rabbit stew, please. No thank you on the whiskey.
Alrighty. Brinley, would you serve up 3 helpings of your famous rabbit stew?
And she chuckles and heads into the back.
Now, I will say we ain't got too many travelers in these parts as of late. Where are y'all headed? If you don't mind my asking.
We're heading out to Blackthorn Hollow to check on the refinery.
He sort of sighs and he says, actually, you know what? And he pulls out the gold that you gave him and he hands it back and he says, rooms are on the house.
You sure about that?
I appreciate that, but why?
Well, every nice folk that have passed through on their way to the refinery, I ain't ever seen again. So I don't rightly feel comfortable charging you for your rooms for the night if this is the very last night you might ever sleep comfortably.
What a thing to say. How about we analyze that a little bit more?
Oh, we're going to come back. Will you tell us what you've seen, though?
Well, I used to get all sorts of customers come through Blackthorn Hollow. Company boys, all in powder. Come rest up, head down to Twin River, drop it off. I'd see him again in about a week. Like a clock. Owed a good chunk of my livelihood to them company boys, so's I did. Well, about 6 months ago, they stopped coming. In fact, all traffic out of the hollow stops. People go, don't come back. People go to check on those people. They don't come back. Big city, Twin River, sends boys to investigate. They don't come back. Rumors start spreading as they do, and nowadays people won't go near the bog line. They wouldn't go near it if they had all of Threed's army at their back. Saying there's the beast of Blackthorn Bog running around. And then he turns and he spits over his shoulder.
You seen anything like that?
Well, I chalk it up to superstition. But then the bodies started showing up.
The hell do you mean?
The what?
Real unnatural stuff. Torn to bits. Chalk white. Some of them, he sort of looks back and he says, I'm sorry, I'm putting you off of Boiling Brook. It really ain't all that awful.
Mr. Porterfield, I'm gonna need you to keep going. What happened to the bodies?
He sort of looks at you and he says, "Now listen here, young lady, I don't want to fill your heads with nasty tales."
I don't care, Mr. Porterfield. What happened?
And about that time, the front doors slam open. Thunder cracks across the sky, and you see a hooded figure standing in the doorway. Very tall. They come in, close the doors behind them. Early sort of shuffles around from behind the bar to help as the wind is doing its damnedest to keep these doors open. They slam the doors, and Early says, "Well, I reckon nobody else is coming in through this, and if they do, they're gonna have to knock." And he slides a large plank over the doors, effectively locking them. Early shuffles back over to behind the bar, and the hooded figure goes down to the end of the bar, far away from the three of you.
Is this the same hooded figure I saw earlier?
You don't know.
Okay.
Early shuffles over to the end of the bar. The figure sort of leans in and whispers in his ear. And Early says, "As a matter of fact, I do have one more room. Would you like something to eat first? It's mighty harsh out there." And the figure sort of leans in and whispers again. He says, right. And he takes a key, hands it to the figure. The figure turns and leaves up the stairs without another word. And Early sort of rocks back on his heels. And he looks over at the three of you and says, "Oh, pardon. Pardon my rudeness. What are we talking about?"
"The bodies."
"The bodies. Yeah, some people say they were animal attacks. Torn to bits, some of them were. But, I gotta look at one or two of them, and, I ain't never seen no animal do anything like that. Almost seemed deliberate. Like it was... well, I don't know. I can't really put my finger on it. Something strange. Something unnatural."
"Strange how?"
"It seemed... intentional."
The folks, the bodies that turned up, you think they were coming out of the bog?"
"Some of them were. Recently we had a body turn up right outside the city limits. Now, as I've given enough evidence to this being some sort of supernatural thing, I will also say that the weather right now has been driving animals out of their mind. Rain like this has been happening on and off for the past couple months, and, well, it tends to drive animals out their homes. Tends to make them desperate." "So, as much as I'd like to put some sort of crazy spin on it and make a tall tale, could be just run-of-the-mill animals. I don't know. I just run the bar. And I have been running the bar for the past, 60 years now. Took it on from my pa."
"Can I make like a retroactive insight check into what Early's reaction was talking to the hooded guy, hooded person?"
"Sure."
Jesus Christ. It's a 2.
Oh, God.
Gotta stop rolling those 2s.
Early seemed really polite.
"Now, Early, you've been around a while, right?"
Well... I was born and raised here in Boiling Brook, and my dad was born and raised here in Boiling Brook, and his papa was also born in Boiling Brook. So the Porterfield's been here a long time."
"Well, obviously we've got a primary goal for while we're in the area, but I figured okay. while we were around here, I got a friend of mine that I've been looking out for, last name of Briar. Do you possibly know if she's passed through here at all?"
"Last name of Briar.
They'd be 2 middle-aged women or so, 45, 50.
"Well, I was just going to tell your friend here that it's funny that they asked that, because I knew not one but 2 people named Briar passed through here. Traveling folks, I believe. I only remember it because... well, it was about the time that everything started shutting down. They were some of the last customers I had come through. You know these folks?"
"In a sense. we're hoping, honestly, that they might be some help to us when we're heading down that way. They got a knack for dealing with some difficult, sticky situations.
Well, they seemed right powerful people in their own right, and I don't know if they got mixed up in all this, but I don't know. The way y'all are talking, it seems like a lot of this stuff might be connected. Or so's you're thinking.
We're starting to get a hunch.
Well,
did you overhear the Briars talking about what they might be doing to help?
Not particularly,
I guess what I'm looking for, do you know what some folks were planning that hasn't worked?
It hasn't worked.
I imagine folks come in here with all kinds of plans of what to do, and if they haven't come out, we need to know what they tried.
Well, I'll say that some people tried cutting straight through the brush. And, I don't suppose that went and worked out well for them. Some people tried taking the main road. Problem is, what with the near constant cover of rain, I suppose it ain't much of a main road no more. Might be more dangerous than traveling through the brush. Now, I did hear tale of, well, the company men. And this, don't let me go putting ideas in your head.
I think we probably aren't going to take our cues from the company men.
Well, these boys, they used to haul powder. And when you're hauling it back and forth so often as you do, you got to have a system set up. And back about 6 months ago, at least, they had a system of mine carts through the bog. It shipped the powder directly from the refinery to Boilingbrook. From here, they'd rent a wagon, head on over.
Wait, hold on. Are the mines still working? The mine carts, that system still working?
I don't rightly know. I'll be honest, much as I've said that folks tend to steer clear of Blackthorn Bog, that also applies to me.
Well, shoot, we might have to take our cues from the company boys.
Now, at the same time, you seem like sweet folks. It's awful dangerous out there. And if y'all got ideas to head through the bog in the mine carts, well, he sort of looks at himself and he says, I ain't really in a position to stop you. You seem like rightly powerful folks in your own right. But I will say, be careful. Hell, be more careful than the people who were being careful that came before you. And if you do know those two ladies, perhaps you can take comfort in, when they were here, they were the life of the party.
Oh yeah? What happened?
That banjo player. Hell, we ain't never had such a talented musician around here. And the other had wild roses springing from her hands and handed one out to everybody in the bar.
That sounds about right.
Well, it was a right beautiful evening. And I hope that they're safe and that they'll see you again. And if you do find them, let them know that they've got a fan here in Boilingbrook.
We're going to find them.
I hope you do. He smiles and he says, and if I didn't make it clear before, everything is on the house this evening, so your money's no good here. And around that time, Brinley comes out with three bowls of rabbit stew.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, what's your most expensive drink then? If everything is comped,
Stump, come on.
He offered.
Oh my!
He laughs and slaps his knee and says, "A smart man. Let me get you some of the finest."
Appreciate it.
Stump, we can't take you anywhere. Come on.
Yeah, hey, if he didn't offer, I might have paid for it. But he was like, "You take it," you know. So here we are.
Honestly, I'm a stump on this one.
Oh, Lord.
They offer you the good stuff. You get it.
Yeah, you ain't wrong.
You have your rabbit stew, and it hits the spot.
Yeah.
It is perfect for the weather that's beating against the walls outside. You see Brinley goes over and hands a bowl to Shorna, who ravenously eats her bowl. Before long, Early says, all right. That's the last call for drinks. I'm closing up shop. You can stick around, but I'm going to head to bed here in a bit, and I'm locking up the bar, and if any of y'all need anything, now's the time. Shorna goes over
slaps down some money on the counter and says, "Thank ye, old stranger." And then scuttles up the stairs. Now y'all get some shut-eye, you hear?
Will do.
And you all head up to your rooms.
Absolutely not getting some shut-eye.
Oh, Stump's gonna sleep like a rock.
God, the roughest night sleep.
I'm gonna, if we're going to sleep, I'm gonna ritual cast alarm around my room, because I think that's as much as I can do.
Okay. Stump.
I don't like the sound of that. No, put that back. Put that thing back where it came from.
Or so help me. Stump. You ritual cast alarm. Will you tell me the specifics of that spell, if you please?
How specific? Okay.
How specific?
Boy, I'm
going to hide some things.
You set an alarm against unwanted intrusions. Choose a door, a window, or an area within range that is no larger than a 20-foot cube. So I'm going to pick my room.
Mm-hmm.
And until the spell ends, an alarm alerts you whenever a tiny or larger creature touches or enters the warded area. Okay. When you cast the spell, you can designate creatures that won't set off the alarm. So I'll obviously set Hayden and Salome. And I can choose whether the alarm is mental or audible. I'll probably go with a mental alarm for this.
Okay.
And it alerts me with a ping in my mind if I'm within 1 mile of it, which I am.
Okay.
Ooh. Ooh, I like that.
Right before we all part ways and go to bed, I'm going to try to do this sneakily, because I noticed Stump having like an agitated reaction about this amulet.
Okay.
I'm just going to like clap Stump on the back and be like, "All right, good night, Stump. You sleep good." And cast Protection from Evil and Good on Stump. So this gives him...
Y'all, Casey's eyes right now.
Aberrations, Celestials, Elementals, Fae, Fiends, and Undead have disadvantage on attack rolls. Stump also cannot be charmed, frightened, or possessed by them, and they have advantage if they are making a new save against those things.
And it lasts like 8 hours, right?
I think it doesn't, actually. I think it only lasts for like 10 minutes, unfortunately. Yeah. But it'll give him like, hopefully it'll be like right before we all try to go to sleep.
Okay. You slap Stump on the shoulder. Stump goes to his room.
If this is gonna become a bigger thing, I do have one quick thing I want to do before I go to bed as well.
Okay.
Mine is very... The face you are making right now.
No, go for it.
Mine is very, very small.
Sure.
I have never used this before, but I would like to expend a spell slot and use my primeval awareness.
Okay.
Which allows me to sense whether any aberrations, celestials, dragons, elementals, fae, fiends, or undead are present within a mile of me.
Ooh.
Oh, actually, it's within six miles if it's my favored terrain, which I don't know if we count this as desert, really, because we're kind of in a bog.
This is not desert.
Yeah.
This is bogland. Hence the bogland brew. Okay. I'll handle this. Hayden, and then Stump. Hayden, you go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
As you're tucking in, you cast this primeval awareness, and your head starts to hit the pillow when a cold spot emerges on your radar. You don't know where, you don't know what, but there is an aberration near you.
Well, I think I'm going to be sleeping with my crossbow snuggled up beside me if I fall asleep at all.
God.
You do.
Yeah.
Hayden, do you sleep?
You know what? I do. Okay. Because I am still quite aware when I sleep.
Let me have you roll a perception check with disadvantage.
With disadvantage? That's a 17.
Jesus Christ.
My lowest my lowest roll was a 14.
All right.
Okay. I have to roll something real quick. Okay. Stump. You cast alarm.
Mm-hmm.
You set the parameters that the group is able to pass through it. Stump, as your head hits the pillow, the night closes in around you. And as you sleep, roll a charisma check with advantage.
Ooh.
That's a 13.
Okay.
Ugh, I don't like this.
Stump. You have vivid dreams. You are in a vast city. Its walls, its streets are paved with black glass, and the sun hangs low in the sky, and it is red. A very familiar red. Coming from the edges of the horizon, you hear voices chanting. And they seem to be saying the same thing over and over, but you just can't quite make out the words. And as you try to listen in, a voice echoes in your head that says, "He can protect you, Stump. He can protect all of you." And then the red sun approaches you. It grows bigger and bigger in the sky, but as it grows bigger, you see it expanding past the edges of the buildings as if it's not getting bigger in the sky. It's coming towards you. And it hovers in front of you, and you reach out and you hold it in your hand. And it says, "He will protect you, Stump." Hayden, you wake up as you hear the click of your door closing shut. You take stock of your room, but there is no one else in here. But you go to your quiver, and you open the secret compartment, which only you know about, and the amulet is gone. The real amulet.
Oh.
Stump, the sun changes in your hand. It grows smaller, and as it does, it grows a second ring around it, gleaming silver. And you see that it is the amulet in your hand, and it says, "Wake up." You snap awake. You are standing at the doorway of the kitchen of the Boglin Brew. And you feel an urge to move through the kitchen door to what lies beyond. Do you open the door?
Yeah.
As you go to open the door, you realize something is in your hand, and you look down, and just as in the dream, the amulet sits in your hand, pulsing. You push open the door. And as you do, you're almost knocked back by wind. You open, and you see for the first time the kitchen of the Boglin Brew. It is small. It's modest for what it is. You see barrels open containing foodstuffs. You see a kitchen, a sink. You see counters laden with the scraps of today's dinner. You see a doorway in the back that seems to lead to a bathroom. And then, catty corner to that, is the door leading outside, and it is wide open. Wind is blowing water in. The storm is in this kitchen. And you look, and you almost don't notice it at first because of this, because of the wind rushing through, ripping this kitchen apart. And then you look and see a figure in the kitchen. They are slumped over the kitchen sink, unmoving, except in the wind.
Oh, I run over to it.
You run over and turn over the body of Early Porterfield. And he has been ripped apart. And that is where we'll end our session.
for listening to episode 17 of Mage Hand High Five, The Badlands. Stay tuned after this for a promo from our friends at Deck of Many Aces. Want to hear us talk more about our show? Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/magehandhighfive. All the thanks to Jacob Kersner for orchestrations and Shane Smith for our logo and our cover art. Check out our website at www.magehandhighfive.com and look for us all over social media. We're on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Discord, wherever else we may be, we're going to be there at Mage Hand High Five. Go to your podcatcher of choice and throw a 5-star review our way. Gah! Maybe later. Throw it later. I wasn't ready. I didn't duck. My head hurts. Anyway, let's shout out all of our subscribers on Patreon. We've got Patrick Hickman, Debbie, Nathan Ritter, Chicken Too Tasty, Evan Noon, Avery Spar, A.M. Lovelies, Ellison DeVelvis, Doss Carpenter, Diana Bacon, Al Forestoki, Liz Spar, Carrie Lee, Jonathan Gunn, Tyler Gardner, Mira the Nerd, Elda Soul, Julada Pang, Michael Clevenger, Laura, Al, Chloe Utley, and Sammy Richardson. You're all fantastic and cannot be improved upon. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your foes about the show. Tell those people that are kind of on the fence about being your friend or foe. They can't really decide. They're sort of going like, eh, I mean, I give it a 5 out of 10. It's got a fine beat, but I can't really dance to it. Tell them about us using the hashtag MHH5. And hey, how about a high five?
Welcome. I'm Bastet. I'll be running your operation. The project's official name is the Adventurers' Research of Abnormal Civilian Experiences, or Project Arrow Ace for short, to investigate the unusual occurrences that have been happening everywhere recently. I've hired you all for your indisputable military prowess.
I'm going to be honest. I think we should run.
Your academic expertise.
I don't know. I'm not a wizard in real life.
And your hands-on experiences.
Tentacles belong in the ocean!
I also lost all my food, so Delphi, in a few hours you might start looking really delicious.
Oh! Okay.
Can everyone please roll for initiative?
Oh, I nearly cut so hard.
Deck of Many Aces is an actual play podcast made by an all-aromantic and asexual cast and crew. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever else you listen to podcasts, releasing every other Friday. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Deck of Many Aces.